It is Sunday morning. It's time to look through the window of baseball brought to us by Marvin Windows and Truett and White. And we bring in the baseball expert, and I wish he was sitting here with me today, and that is Bruce Jenkins. Bruce, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Marty? I love that Giants team bus update. I tell you, you're right on top of things.
Yeah, no, well, you know how things get in spring training. We had a little bit of a pool yesterday to figure out what time the bus was leaving, and believe it or not, I won at 11. I had it 11 o'clock. 11:10 was the closest to me, and I actually won that. And, of course, you win nothing other than the bragging rights of being able to say, see, I told you.
Well, the great ones always know the inside of the bus trip.
Really? Hey, you know, I'm excited about this today. I kid you not, and I wish you were here. I wish we were sitting together as we have done down here. But Kershaw, he's going to be the opening day starter. I've read that at MLB.com. And he's going to have to probably go about 5-plus today, I would imagine. And the lefty Escobar goes for the Giants.
Yeah, I think Kershaw's not real happy these days. I mean, he's in a little hurry-up mode to get ready for a March 22nd season opener in Australia. You know, I mean, at which point he can come back and then resume his spring training. You know, I'm not kidding here, as fans know. And that can be kind of disruptive. And Escobar, I did see the game he pitched against the A's. I was sitting right behind the plate, and you know, it's hard to tell what you're really looking at, but he threw pretty much all fastballs around 91, 92 and mowed down six guys in a row. He looked good. I think, as you said, he's probably the number one option if they need help. You know, maybe not just from the minors, but just in general. I mean, you know, who knows about Petit and what's going on there. As long as Escobar keeps, you know, retiring hitters in the economical fashion that he has, he's a left-hander. He's been around. He seems to have it together. He declared at the beginning of spring, I'm ready to go right now, so, you know, into the big. So, interesting option there.
All right, I'm back. You know, we got a lot of wires here. You know that. But you handled it well. You didn't panic. I like that. You know, you're a veteran of radio already.
Well, I'm just glad it wasn't my fault. Usually, if somebody stumbles over something or there's a wire connection, you're going to
look
straight at me.
All right, Edwin Escobar, I just want to finish up with him, Bruce, because this is a good part of the game today. He'll be 22 years old April 22nd. 6'2", 200, and as we say, a left-hander out of Venezuela. They got him in exchange for Ben Snyder from the Rangers in April 1st of 2010, which is a story in itself. But last year, San Jose and Richmond, 8-8 and 26 games. He threw 128 innings, and in that 128 innings, walked 30 and struck out 146.
Yeah, I mean, those are eye-catching numbers, without a doubt. I mean, they had their eye on Escobar when he was a kid in mid-teens in Venezuela, and he wound up signing with the Rangers, but they never lost sight of him. They wound up getting him basically for nothing, as you say there. And all of a sudden now he's one of these guys who's developing a little later in life. And, you know, he's got really good command. I don't think there's any doubt that he has good command. It's just really a matter of whether, you know, he's going to be able to get by with a 91, 92-mile-an-hour fastball. And he's got good movement on it, and he's got some other secondary pitches that work well. So I think their optimism is justified till further notice.
Yeah, no, I agree. And what I'm going to look for today is composure. And just the composure on the mound to go against what I think should be somewhat of a veteran lineup. D. Gordon, they're trying to make him the second baseman. Puig, they say, I haven't seen the lineup yet. He's supposed to be back today. Kemp isn't going to play, but he's on his way back as well. But I want to see the kid's composure out there today against the Dodger lineup.
Yeah, I'd like to see him with, you know, two guys on, and here comes Puig and nobody out. Now, you say it's just an exhibition game, but believe me, it isn't for him.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the World Series for Escobar. So, yeah, those kinds of situations will be interesting to watch.
Good point. Bruce Jenkins with us on this beautiful Sunday morning here, Camelback Ranch. Bruce, I warned everybody, bring the sunscreen. You want to describe what this place is like?
Well, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's actually a few blocks from nowhere. It takes forever to get out there. All of a sudden, you see this gigantic planet which is the football stadium, and you're looking around. There's nothing more than a story high, you know, in any direction. It's you know, one little fried chicken place after another. There's no hotels. I mean, it really is out there. But once you get inside the complex, there's this lovely ballpark, obviously very modern. And they're the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's kind of strange after all these years, you know, knowing they were in Vero Beach, Florida, one of the great spring training complexes ever built, a real legendary spot. But I think it's great they're out here. It's obviously great for L.A. fans who can pop over to Arizona and see the team. And it's you know, once you get there, it's about an hour from Scottsdale. It's not a backbreaking drive by any means. And once you get out there, it's quite delightful.
Yeah. You know, the other part is the whole National League West is down here. I like that.
Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Really, so you really, you know, Padre, you're going to run into everybody and you get a feel for what's going on.
Very convenient and long overdue. I did hate to see the Dodgers leave Vero because I was able to go there several times and it was a kind of a magical setting. But, yeah, absolutely, they're on the real side. If you can get a look at teams. And, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know if you want to use the word gamesmanship, but, you know, managers have been known to hold back certain things, certain, maybe a new pitch a guy's working on, a prospect or whatever, when they are playing. I say the Dodgers and the Giants, you're not going to see all the cards played, which is an interesting angle, too.
Boy, it's amazing. All right, this is baseball in Arizona. Nothing better than to sit here and get ready for a game. Bruce, yesterday we talked a little bit jokingly about Andy Skiles, and, of course, he's going to be the hitting instructor at Fresno this year. He told me, and I didn't know the stat, and someone told him, he has more wins as a professional manager than anyone in the game since 2008. Incredible. Really, and a lot of it's been at San Jose where he had success, but how about that?
Yeah, he managed the San Jose teams when they had Bumgarner and Posey, and he had a great success at Richmond. A real interesting guy. A guy was born in New Zealand. His father was a famous music scholar and composer down there, and you know he's you don't get a lot of ball players out of New Zealand. That's for sure. But here's this guy. All of a sudden, he was a minor league catcher for the Padres and the Yanks. I think he played for the Dodgers a little bit, and the Giants got a hold of him. And I'm not sure exactly how he wound up managing San Jose, but he was born for that job.
Yeah, and you know, I know your dad, Gordon Jenkins, one of the great composers and arrangers, Frank Sinatra. You know, and you and I wrote a beautiful book about him. So I said, boy, when I heard this from Andy Skiles, I said I got to tell this to Bruce. So will you give me just a little background on Andy Skiles' father? Because it's same kind of industry.
Well, he's—I don't know an awful lot about him. I was Googling him yesterday after you mentioned his name, and almost all the Skiles references were about Andy. I did dig up an article from a website called Stuff in New Zealand, and they're talking about Andy being born in a place called Ramati or something like that. But they mentioned Dr. H. Wilbur Skiles as a famous music scholar, editor, and choral composer.
Yeah.
It was, and was actually, he was born in Dunedin, but I don't think that's Dunedin, Florida. He's obviously a New Zealander, but I never heard the name when I was growing up, but he's obviously quite the musical icon in New Zealand.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you could do that, because Andy said he's one of the leading musical historians in the world. So I thought it was great. So thank you very much for doing that. I'm glad that I could have you do that. Let's move forward. Barry Bonds comes in tomorrow. And I had fun on the post game last night, Bruce. And I said, let's forget about steroids for a second. Let's talk about Barry Bonds as a baseball player. I said to the audience, what would you want to ask him? If you could sit down with him and, you know, let's just talk baseball with Barry Bonds. You have any thoughts on that? What you'd want to talk about with him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My wife and I have had season tickets at the Giants Park since the beginning, and they're looking right down the right field line. And it's always a great sight when a left-handed hitter really jacks one and you follow this great hooking pattern, and, boy, you hope that thing stays fair. You're right in line with it. And Bonds had a way. When he dead pulled one off an inside pitch, the ball didn't hook that much. It stayed fair. And you'd hear Kruko and Kuiper going, this is amazing how he does that. And I would ask him, what is it about your swing that produced such a laser beam of a line drive that didn't go hooking into oblivion?
Right. Well, that's a good point.
Geez, I'd ask him. I mean, Hunter Pence mentioned that he's choked up on the bat a little bit since he noticed Bonds had so much success. And here's the greatest home run hitter of all time. Choking up just a little bit on the bat, you know, how did that start? What gave him the idea to do that? And I'd ask him, you know, about his dad's influence. the great Bobby Bonds. Barry was, I think he was about 11 when Bobby Bonds left the Giants and go to the Yankees, and that kind of caused a big tailspin in his career. It was a rough time for Bobby. He was with a different team every year, and here's Barry, now 11, 12, 13, 14, impressionable ages. There was a lot of bitterness there, but still, I mean, this is his dad. He's a great hitter, and there's just no doubt that Bobby imparted some wisdom to Barry. I always thought Barry was a master of the mental game. Everybody talks about steroids and this and that, but his mental approach to the game and the way he handled situations was absolutely without match. And Bobby was like that when he broke in. So I'd be kind of curious to see exactly what kind of things Bobby imparted to his son.
Yeah, great. It would be fascinating to be able to sit down with him and ask him what pitchers gave you trouble. What kind of a pitch gave you trouble?
Uh-huh.
And how could you wait so long? What was the secret of waiting so long before you brought the bat through the zone? And, you know, one of the best at that. And how do you play left field at this ballpark?
Exactly.
You know, because he had that down as well. So I hope, I truly do, I'll be there tomorrow morning. I know I saw Bob Nightingale last night. Every writer in the Valley will be at Scottsdale Stadium tomorrow at 10 a.m., I'm sure, to see Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I think that part of it's going to be a real shame. I mean, they're not going to be asking about the things we're talking about here, I don't think. And that's, you know, it's going to put Bonds in on the defensive right away. All these guys descending upon that fallen, you know, steroid case, and it's just pathetic, really. I mean, he's got so much to offer, and that's what this whole thing is about. But it'll settle down after a couple of days.
Yeah, and I said to Andy Baggerly last night, he joined me on the postgame show at the end of it, I said, you know, if I'm his lawyer, the case is still on appeal.
Yeah.
I just say, look, you can't talk about anything, and that's the end of it, and let's move on to the next question. And if the lawyer, I'm sure, gave him that advice, and he says that tomorrow, after the first question, everyone's going to have to say, okay, let's now ask what you just talked about, I would hope.
The Giants have been known to monitor certain conversations and sort of steer the questions in a different direction once they've been exhausted, you know, and that might be the case here.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Hey, I ran into Gaylord Perry last night. I was lucky enough to be invited to a Hall of Fame dinner at the Valley Ho last night. Robin Yount was there. Gaylord Perry was there. It made me think about Perry. He's a Hall of Famer. He sits there with a Giant hat on wherever he goes. He's always signing autographs here. He's as much of a Giant as Horace Stoneham. And he doesn't have a statue at AT&T Park. Ostensibly because he left the Giants when he didn't want to leave. He hated leaving for Sam McDowell. Charlie Fox wanted to get rid of him. And he ended up playing for so many other teams and having so much success for other teams that some people think, well, maybe he's not a Giant and not worthy of it. How do you feel about that?
Well, he's definitely a Giant. I mean, that's where his heart is, where it always was, and he would love to have been one of those guys who never left. But I think because he traveled so much, you know, there's something about a statue. You're thinking about guys like Stan Musial or Al Kaline, you know, somebody, you know, Cal Ripken, who just was the organization, top to bottom, start to finish. That to me is the kind of guy that you build a statue for. I just think Gaylord Perry was a little too well traveled, and as you say, did have an awful lot of success afterward. It's certainly not a slight on him. I don't know. There's just something about a statue to me that implies a little bit more longevity with the team.
All right. That's sort of the argument on the thing. But is a Hall of Famer, did go in as a Giant as well. I'm on the other side of the coin on that one.
If you build a statue, does he have a little sandpaper in the back pocket?
He has the tube of Vaseline.
Yeah.
and you know, so the truth of it, it's funny you say that. If there was going to be a statue, you would have his pitching hand touching the bill of his cap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You have to do that.
And if you get a ladder and reach up there, it's actually a little bit moist under there.
Right. Really. The eternal light, as they say. That's a very good. Hey, Romo got whacked around pretty good yesterday. I know that some of the tweets this morning from the guys who talked to him, he's working on a changeup and all this stuff. But, Bruce, let me tell you. He's pitched three innings. He's given up 12 runs, 11 earned, and he's missing by 2 feet. Any concern about him?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, only because he's pretty much a one-pitch guy. I mean, he's got other pitches, and if he does get the changeup to where he can trust it, which I don't think he's anywhere near that right now, you know, that's great. But, I mean, the slider is the pitch. I mean, when it comes down to a crucial at bat, to Jay Bruce or whatever you want to talk about it, and of course he shocked Miguel Cabrera with the fastball, but it's slider after slider after slider. That's how he's made his living. That's going to how he's continued to make it. And until that pitch fails him, I'm not too worried. But it is, you know, when that pitch does, you know, depart him, he's pretty much done, I would think. I mean,
yeah,
he certainly doesn't have a big league fastball or anything else. So that's going to be the test. It's one of those things where a guy's trying stuff in spring training, and it's not working.
Yeah,
he's going to have to go back to himself. And as long as he throws that slider the way he always has, with just insane, you know, movement, kind of unhittable, really, he'll be all right. But it's a little bit fragile because when you only have one pitch or that's it, it can kind of go on you at any time.
Yeah, no, you're right. Boy, good baseball with you, huh? Good baseball conversation on a Sunday morning. I wish you were here to see this one today.
No, I'd love to be out there. It's a real interesting start for Kershaw, who's really got to stretch it out a little bit. Getting ready for Australia. If he has a rough outing, it'll be interesting to see where they go from there.
Yeah, they're trying to make D. Gordon the second baseman. They have almost given up on the Cuban transplant here.
For the Giants.
Yeah, just not doing it. Hey, they talk about D. Gordon, one last thing, and they say if he could only hit the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
And I say the same thing about Blanco. If Blanco would put the ball on the ground, he'd be a different ball player.
Yeah, that's right. Gordon hasn't hit at all, really, at any time in the big, so that's going to be rough for them.
Yeah, Don Mattingly said, if you hit a fly ball, it's like being a little leaguer, and here they catch fly balls.
They sure do.
That was a good line from Mattingly. That was
absolutely
good. All right, have a wonderful Sunday, and look forward to talking to you next week, Bruce.
You bet, Marty. Talk to you then.
All right, that's great. That's the great Bruce Jenkins. Always a pleasure on Sunday morning. All right, more coming up. Right here from Camelback Ranch, Giants and Dodgers. You just like to even say those words right here on the Sports Leader.